Flaherty from EssentialCSLewis.com. Welcome to All About Jack, a C.S. Lewis podcast. Today the program is almost about Jack or C.S. Lewis. That is, I'm sharing an interview from respected C.S. Lewis scholar Dr. Charlie Starr, but it's not directly about Lewis. Instead, it's about a brand new fictional book that is influenced in part by Lewis and is done in the vein of Lewis's science fiction trilogy. The book by Charlie is called The Heart of Light, A Tale of Solomon Starr, and is the first of what should be many great adventures. This podcast is also different in another way. I had Dr. Crystal Hurd, a frequent guest on All About Jack, actually conduct the interview. As you may remember, she has done another interview for me. This was last year in 2013. It was a brief visit with Dr. Malcolm Guyt. And then earlier this year in 2014, she was the guest on a special miniseries, Four Parts, dealing with C.S. Lewis and women. Today, though, as I mentioned, is with Dr. Charlie Starr, who has done an essay chat with me before, and also was a guest in 2012 about a book entitled Light that dealt with an unusual real-life mystery surrounding a short story by C.S. Lewis. Finally, be sure to visit EssentialCSLewis.com and the new podcast location at allaboutjack.podbean.com for other great material and for links mentioned in the show.
Charlie, thank you so much for joining us today and answering some questions about your brand new book called The Heart of Light. Also, thank you for giving me the opportunity to read it. It's a fantastic book, and I'm excited for the release of it. So, Charlie, can you provide us with a brief sort of synopsis or overview of The Heart of Light?
Yeah, sure. Solomon Starr, the main character, lives in an age of benevolent empire, something like 13 or 15,000 years in the future. He is a member of the Empire's regular army, a colonel in the army, and is sent to a jungle planet, Kaal, to find his father who lives among the people there. Only by finding his father can he get production going again of rare woods and the like that the Empire is greedy for. Solomon is taken on a journey into the jungle to find his father, but it's also a spiritual journey. And on that journey, he encounters the Heart of Light. But then we also learn that Solomon has a past that involves the Empress of the Galaxy and a group of assassins who have been sent to follow him into the jungle and kill him if they can. At the same time, we learn that there is intrigue on the Empire's capital planet as rumors of war are in the air.
It's very cool. Yes, very cool. And folks, I just finished this book and it's fantastic. And I'm not a huge, reader of sci-fi. I read some things. I read a lot of stuff, but this is top notch. So it's intriguing. It's adventure. It's everything you need. So Charlie, you're actually a very well-known Lewis scholar and well-respected. And you're known for having written in various genres, academic works, religious books, and even children's books. So this is your first science fiction novel. So what inspired you to write science fiction?
Well, I'd say I was probably trying to write science fiction before I wrote anything else. I grew up on moon landings, literally, and science fiction television. When I was a kid, I was watching Lost in Space and The Time Tunnel and especially Star Trek in their original runs. Then, of course, at age 13, I went to a little movie that my friend told me I absolutely had to see called Star Wars, and that changed just about everything. I wrote my first sort of science fiction book in a very Jules Verneian fashion when I was 12 years old. 100 pages, not bad for a kid, and then I threw it away, and I'm sorry I did that when I read it later on. After that, I kept all my work, but have always dabbled in writing sci-fi since I was very young, probably even 7 years old. So I've always been in love with science fiction, especially in film and television, and always been interested in writing it.
Now, for this particular story with Solomon Starr, what was sort of the genesis or the germ idea for this particular story?
Yeah, I can remember it very specifically. It was 1985. I had just graduated college, and I was a month away from being married. And I was reading a book by C.S. Lewis called Surprised by Joy. It was his autobiography. And he was talking about ideas I had never encountered before. But in talking about his own childhood, he mentioned having written a series of stories with his brother Warney, stories about a place called Animal Land, which then got connected to Warney's stories about India. And I remember thinking to myself, wow, I wish I'd done that sort of thing when I was a kid. And I had this flash in which I realized, you know, I actually had done that sort of thing when I was a kid. I hadn't written the stories, but I had imagined them, and I had tied a series of stories together in my imagination. So I put down the copy of the book that I was reading, and I took up a pen and a notebook, and I wrote out an outline for a series of stories on a single hero who I eventually named Solomon Star. I still have that outline, and I have lots of stories in it that could be produced. But then it was, I think, within a couple of years that I actually then got started on writing this first story out of Solomon's World.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Now, speaking of Lewis, you mentioned that he was sort of the genesis of Solomon. I actually saw, when I was reading, saw echoes of Lewis's Dr. Ransom from the Space Trilogy, and Solomon, and in your plot. I mentioned to you that we have a Savage, which is the female guide, and Solomon's first introduction to the planet is very, very similar to Ransom's, you know, first introduction to Malacandra. Lots of interesting parallels there. So were you influenced by the Space Trilogy, and if so, in what ways?
Lewis himself pointed out that how we write a thing is not necessarily something that's easy for us to remember. I'm willing to bet that many influences to my book have been unconscious. I can definitely remember some specific things. I definitely wanted to write a moral tale, which is certainly in the spirit of what Lewis did in the Space Trilogy. And The Heart of Light is definitely a tale written by a Christian. As Lewis would not necessarily say it's a Christian book, but a book written by a Christian, I would very much say the same thing. In college, I did read the Space Trilogy, and it certainly showed me what science fiction was capable of, which other science fiction hadn't shown me yet. I think the specific influences from C.S. Lewis on this book, though, probably came later. Earlier influences were more along the lines of things like Frank Herbert's Dune, classic science fiction, Starship Troopers, and then literary classics like Dante, Melville, and Faulkner. I think the Lewis emphasis came later as I was revising the book, and Lewis especially influenced the emphasis on describing the landscape, especially its beauty. Another influence on the book, without a doubt, was an attempt to respond to Conrad's Heart of Darkness, which I was first introduced to not through Conrad, but through Coppola in the movie Apocalypse Now, which is a Vietnam version of Heart of Darkness. And I wanted to respond to that idea that if we look beneath the trappings of civilization, what we discover is what Kurtz discovers, and that is nothing but darkness and horror. And I wanted to respond and say, no, if you look beneath the darkness in the world, what you find is unending light. So that was certainly one of the influences in the book. I think the Dante influences were something that I discovered only after I'd written one or two drafts, and I then read Dante and reread Perelandra, Lewis's second book in the Space Trilogy, and I saw, oh, here's Dante in Perelandra. And then I realized when I went back to my own novel, oh, here's Dante in my novel, and I didn't even plan it that way. It just sort of worked out that way. I suppose the family that archetypes together stays together or something like that. but then there really were a variety of influences, and I think Lewis's influence came in later drafts, and I cannot tell you how many drafts I've written of the book because I've really lost count.
Charlie, that's really interesting how you have been able to sort of illuminate positive traits in science fiction. It's very redeeming. It's very positive, I think, and something that sort of contradicts a lot of the early science fiction themes that you even mentioned Star Trek and some of the other stuff that sort of talks about the great unknown and how there's evil and darkness there, but there's also goodness.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's right. In the novel, I think you especially see it in the contrasting of the two worlds, Imperial world, Amrik's world, and Kull, one world that seems permeated by darkness, the other by light. But the image that I hope the reader takes away at the end is the image of light, is the image of goodness and benevolence behind all living things. Mm-hmm. The benevolence of being, definitely a central theme in my novel.
Mm-hmm. Very neat. Well, as you know, I'm always very fascinated with gender portrayals, and you have some very intriguing gender portrayals in this book. For example, there's Janice, who's the Empress, and Savage, who is the guide for Solomon on Kull. So can you comment on how these females shaped your story?
Yes, and we should probably also mention that Dr. Crystal Hurd has done some great work on gender in C.S. Lewis and made some illuminating discoveries regarding Lewis's approach to women, which I think are going to be read by many for many years to come. Let's talk about Solomon and the women in his life. Well, let's start with Solomon himself, because he seems to be almost a tragic lover. Mm-hmm. Any kind of relationship he gets into with a woman never just seems to work out. I'm not exactly sure if that reveals that I have women issues or anything like that, but Solomon certainly seems to. Janice represents, in my mind, the masculinized feminine. That is to say, everything that happens to a woman when she absorbs the worst of the masculine, lust for power and control, and takes it as her own. And the problem isn't being the empress. The problem isn't that a woman is taking on a role of leadership. The problem is being an empress by agreeing to be neutered, or again, taking only the worst stereotypes of the masculine as they're applied to men. She gets turned into a chauvinist, if you will, in a sense. Somebody who has read the manuscript before once suggested to me that Janice seems to be bipolar. And I thought about that, especially in relation to the questions that you sent to me, Crystal, as we were preparing for this interview, where I type Janice's name as J-A-N-I-S in your question, and I'm not pointing out Crystal spelling issues here, folks. You said you typed her name as J-A-N-U-S, which is a typical pronunciation or a typical typing for Janus the god, for whom the month of January is named, and that's the god with two faces, mm-hmm. the one who's forward and backward. And it occurred to me, oh, I really should change the way that I write her name to reflect that, because she truly runs hot and cold, doesn't she?
Absolutely. That's how I spelled it, because I thought, you know, she's almost male and female blended. She's you know, she has these two sides. It's so that's, you know, I thought that was kind of what ran through my mind. I tried the whole novel to really like her, yeah. and she kept doing these things. I'm like, oh, you know, you're doing so well.
Yeah. And in the end, well, we don't want to say. We don't want the reader to find out too much without reading the book themselves. We don't want to disappoint them or give them any spoilers. But in the end, it seems like Janice can never quite find where that balance is. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, Savage, on the other hand, represents the feminine in its truest strength, in its truest balance. She is mystery without guile. She is power without aggression. She is beauty without selfish seduction, what Lewis called the infernal Venus. This is missing from the character of Savage. And she's wonderful. She's a redeeming character for Solomon, one that in the end he will have to ask himself, is this somebody I should follow or somebody I have to turn away from? And again, we'll leave the readers to find out for themselves where all that goes.
It was fascinating, fascinating stuff. It really was. And again, I urge the reader to pick it up and maybe share your thoughts with William or, and Charlie. Interesting stuff. Now, you mentioned the use of power earlier as she's an empress. And the use and abuse of power is a common recurring motif here, especially concerning Janice and her methods of what I call democratic diplomacy. And you actually have a scene in there where she's before a board of folks, and she's you know trying to make some political decisions. Now, can you expand a little bit, without giving too much away, can you expand a little bit on this, on the power struggle we have here?
Yeah, I can never remember the name of the fellow who said that the 20th century was an argument between 1984 and Brave New World. I remember the quote, but I can never remember the name of the fellow who coined the phrase. 1984, an approach to dystopia, to total social control through hard power, what Lewis might call hideous strength. Mm-hmm. Through violence, through intimidation and fear, versus Brave New World, a method of controlling people through sophisticated bread and circuses, applying Rome to a technological age, if you will. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me that Brave New World won out with the fall of communism in the 90s. The good society in our modern day controls people with happy distractions, plenty of food and fun, and making them believe that they're in charge of their own lives. Well, a despotic empire, take for example the evil empire in the original Star Wars trilogy, that kind of empire is an easy enemy, soon defeated. Mm-hmm. But what are the consequences on those who achieve the goal of empire with one glove of iron and another of silk? Or as the narrator of the story likes to point out, a world, a people, a mindset that is ever so casually bent. Mm-hmm. And that kind of pursuit of power is what's taken up in The Heart of Light.
Very poetic. I like that. Thanks. I like that duality there of the gloves. And you do see a struggle. And I think even within, which this is a really, really great sort of a insight into leadership, you sort of see what Janice is experiencing, the difficulties, personal and professional, of being a leader. There's things that she struggles with, which is very nicely sort of narrated in the text. Very good stuff. Now, this book has a lot of great aspects: conflict, war, love, family ties, tested loyalties. So in one sentence, and this is tough, mm-hmm. can you summarize why everyone needs to pick up this book?
Everyone needs to pick up this book because I need their money. Okay. All right, let me give you a serious answer.
You're supposed to say something insightful.
All right, how about something along these lines? In strange worlds, among strange peoples, we encounter something our everyday lives miss out on, and that is something that is often described as simply the other. And only in encountering that other can we learn things about ourselves, about our own personal blindnesses that we would never encounter before. So I think any solid work of fantasy or science fiction or fairy tale, they're all born of the same blood, can give us that encounter with the other. And for that reason, this book, along with many others in those genres, I hope is worthwhile. Sorry, that was more than one sentence.
No, that's fine. Like I was going to say, we are all Solomon.
Yeah,
in our lives. Yeah, we're all Solomon. We're all on a journey. We're all constantly being tested and tried and checked, and our decisions questioned. You know, we all sort of, you know, and we root for, so I rooted for Solomon the whole book because he is that character. He is a character of light. He is, you know, and he's sort of, but he endures a plethora of issues. And still emerges as a good character, and that's why I love him as a character. He's tested many, many times. But now, speaking of the book, since we've gotten such great information from you. Again, thank you, Charlie, for letting us talk with you about it.
Oh, I'm happy. I'm happy about it. The book's been in my heart. The work of Solomon's Universe has been in my heart since 1985. So here we are 30 years later. Mm-hmm. And finally seeing a publisher pick the book up, I'm just thrilled.
Okay, so when and where can we purchase The Heart of Light?
Well, The Heart of Light is published by Lantern Hollow Press, and you can find it at their website. It is the word lantern and the word hollow, like the hollow of a log, and press, all as one word, lanternhollowpress.com. And the book is also available at Amazon.
All right, so just a couple more questions, Charlie, and I'll let you go. But first, let me ask, if you were on a foreign planet, somewhere in the great, mysterious, inky blackness, and you were facing an uncertain enemy, which weapon would you rather have? Solomon's plasma sword or a lightsaber?
Okay, yeah, great question. And it's a two-edged sword, that question is. Bad pun. Well, you know, the plasma sword is definitely the child of the lightsaber, and I even found a fun way to give recognition to that in the novel. But the plasma sword is sort of the next generation. It is a superior weapon, but it's one that is so good that nobody can actually wield it except a genetically enhanced super soldier like Solomon Star. And so if I had a plasma sword, I'd probably end up lopping off ears and fingers, and it wouldn't do me any good. So I have to go with lightsabers simply because of the fact that I am not genetically enhanced with super speed or agility. But the plasma sword is way cool, and I'm hoping that in the sequel, readers will get to see how it gets used in unique ways, ways that stretch the concept of the lightsaber into new regions, new ideas.
Very neat. Well, before I let you go, light is a theme, is a motif that comes up a lot in your work. Now, you actually just published a book a couple years ago called Light, which is associated with your scholarship on C.S. Lewis. So can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I wrote the Light book, I guess, 3 or so years ago now. It came out in 2012. There is a Lewis manuscript of a short story called Light. That story has a great deal of mystery behind it. The manuscript has a great deal of mystery behind it. There's a lot of questions about its accuracy, authenticity, and especially its meaning. What a strange story it is. So I was privileged with the opportunity to actually publish that story in a book and then talk about the manuscript's authenticity, when it was written, whether or not C.S. Lewis genuinely wrote it. He did. And then also the connections between that story and Lewis's other writings, especially the theme of light, which, as far as I know, hasn't really been looked at deeply in terms of Lewis studies anywhere else. And so I was thrilled to write that book. And then I've written some material on Lewis and epistemology, his ideas about truth and reality and myth, the nature of meaning. Some of that has been published in a variety of sources. Here in this coming fall, when the Marion E. Wade Center releases its Scholarly Journal 7, issue number 31 will contain two new, never-before-seen C.S. Lewis documents, which I was fortunate enough to transcribe and introduce the reader to. So you will be able to read for the first time an essay that Lewis wrote entitled On Bolshevism, and you'll also be able to read some fragments that he wrote on the nature of myth, which don't appear anywhere else in his published writings. So it was very neat to be able to release that material. And then the fun, cool C.S. Lewis thing that I'm working on right now is an analysis of Lewis's handwriting. Lewis's handwriting changed over the decades, sometimes in a single year. He would just start writing words or letters differently. And by mapping out the changes in Lewis's handwriting, I've been able to date manuscripts in Lewis's hand, which haven't been dated in any other way. And I'm looking forward to continuing that work and seeing something published on that, hopefully, next year.
Very neat. And I'm looking forward to all of that. It all sounds wonderful. And by the way, as most people know, Charlie is the C.S. Lewis calligraphy expert. He can pretty much read any piece of work and tell you almost to the week in some instances when these things were written. So fascinating and compelling scholarship you've done on Lewis that we all could benefit from.
Slight exaggeration, but thanks.
No exaggeration. I promise. You've cleared up a lot of questions and helped so many of us who are doing Lewis scholarship. And if you haven't picked up Light, please do. It's a fantastic book. And also, Charlie, thank you so much for joining us today and for answering questions on The Heart of Light. We're excited for the release of this book. It's fantastic. Like I said, I'm a girl. I like to read, you know, more softer stuff sometimes, but this book is for everyone. It has something for everyone, and I urge everyone to pick it up. You get a copy, buy some copies for your friends, go on Amazon and do some great positive reviews. It's a fantastic book. So thank you so much, Charlie, for sharing it with and for sharing some time with us today.
Well, thank you, Crystal. I'm delighted by your enthusiasm. I thank you so much for reading the book and preparing the interview with me. And I really want to thank William O'Flaherty, too, for all the work he's been doing now for several years to bring C.S. Lewis to the World Wide Web.
Allow me to also express thanks to you, the listener, for taking the time to tune in to All About Jack. I'm William O'Flaherty, the director and producer of the show today, and usually also the interviewer. Be sure to visit the show notes at EssentialCSLewis.com or from the podcast page at podbean.com. That's allaboutjack.podbean.com for links mentioned in the show. EssentialCSLewis.com is also a great place to find a wide variety of material about Lewis. That includes a daily fact, quote, and quiz question, a spotlight on other great free resources about Lewis online, and various other articles, and of course, previous podcast episodes.